Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church.
And I'm Doug McBurney. Thanks for having me in, Bob.
Doug, welcome to the show. Glad you could co-host today. Now, we have a great interview lined
up. That's why I came.
That's why you came, and
absolutely.
I don't blame you. So, Jack Cashel, what books has he...
Jack Cashel.
Not all his books. We don't have enough time.
Not all. We can't do them all. But Jack Cashel, well-known WorldNet Daily columnist, author of notable titles.
Yeah.
Like Triumph of Design.
Design, we mentioned that last time Jack was on this show, that he and I both promoted Ben Stein's movie Expelled.
Yes, yes. And a book I just found out about, Sucker Punch.
That's when Cassius Clay went all Muslim on us.
Something like
that. Is that right?
How Elijah Muhammad seduced Muhammad Ali and killed the dream of Martin Luther King Jr.
Wow.
I am picking that book up immediately after the broadcast today.
Yeah.
And then also... latest effort from Jack Cashel, Deconstructing Obama.
Mm.
Deconstructing Obama.
Yeah. In fact, I think Jack Cashel wrote another book. I think it's called Dreams of My Father.
Well, I know. Whenever I Google Dreams from My Father, Jack Cashel seems to be associated.
Right at the top. Jack Cashel, welcome back to Bob and Your Live.
Bob, thanks for having me on. And by the way, all those books that I listed of mine, Bill Ayers actually wrote. I just took credit.
Yeah. Hey, Jack, last time we talked about Obama's terrorist ghost writer. I'm wondering if we could do three things on today's show. Update the story regarding who wrote Obama's book, Dreams of My Father. Then also, if we could mention Donald the Birther Trump and all he's been doing. And then the Mistress of Disaster, an update, do an update there.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, that's a good series of things. You know, what's interesting is the book's been out about a month or so now, and it's finally beginning to break through. And Donald Trump has a lot to do with that. I have to give him credit. You know, he's a crazy man.
A month ago,
I don't think a sane Republican in the country would have voted for him. But he's at least showing them that you can... that Republicans don't have to be wimps, you know?
Yeah, they are wimps. And he's doing it with a smile on his face.
Right.
It's been so fun to watch Donald Trump. And I do not like Donald Trump. From everything I know, he's pro-abortion and liberal in many destructive ways. But
I mean, he voted for Obama in 2008.
Yeah, so this has been fun, though, to watch that he's just had the courage to say, show us the birth certificate. Here's mine. Where's yours?
And when they call him a racist, he doesn't back down. He doesn't, wimp back into his corner and hope that no one, calls him names. He's showing Republicans how to stand up and, make their case on any field, in any subject. We're so weary of them being so timid and so, easily rattled. That when someone does the opposite, we say, hey, go for it.
Yeah, well, it seems like there's been the feminization of, well, for starters, the church.
Yeah.
There's the feminization of the military. Doug is a former Marine. Doug, they're now doing sensitivity training for combat, guys in combat on the front line so that they could work with Green Berets in negligence. With homosexuals in combat. And the Republican Party has also been feminized, so everybody's tender, delicate, and they cry on cue.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. So Donald Trump has injected some testosterone into this confrontation.
I guess.
Yeah, and it's a welcome bit. And I think now when the Michael Huckabees of the world and the Mitt Romneys of the world see what he's doing and see how the base is responding... I think they'll begin to respond. And what I liked about him, too, especially just this the other day, it's not just he's asking for the birth certificate. He's standing up for these so-called birthers.
Yeah.
The other guys in the party all ran away. They've all run away.
Yeah.
Right.
And Trump doesn't. So good
and
for him.
And Trump has he's evolved on this in the last just couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's learning as he goes.
Yeah, he's obviously reading your articles and Corsi's articles.
Yeah.
Bob Unruh's articles. He's absorbing all this. And I think, I don't want to overstate him, but I think he's gone for, hey, I have no doubt he was born in Hawaii, to, hey, he might have an illegitimate presidency because I don't see the evidence that he was born here.
Yeah, right. He's moving along. And the more that they, the White House stonewalls, and I, my guess is that they will never produce it because they're, you know, the conventional wisdom among the people who are smarter than we are on both on the left, of course, and in the center right, they all think that this is a winning issue for the White House. They're crazy. This is a total losing issue for the White House.
Well, Jack, could I ask you a blatantly political question?
Sure.
Doug McBurney here. It's an honor to be on the air with you, by the way. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
So Donald Trump now has put two birth certificates online. The one, the handwritten one from the hospital, as well as the one from New York State. And he's fully thrown in with the birther movement.
Yeah.
But I detect a bit of a tongue-in-cheek with Don Trump. Do you think he's seriously considering running for president, or is he just pumping up the Trump brand?
My guess is that he's pumping up the Trump brand.
Well, I feel bad.
And not just pumping it up, but also pumping it up enough to make him a player in a future Republican administration.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't think he could really win a Republican nomination.
Right, no. No, I wouldn't expect so, and I would hope not. So,
no, I hope
so,
not. Yeah,
so
right.
That's Donald Trump. And do you know, Jack, the approximate percentage these days of how many people question where Obama was born?
Well, certainly on the last poll I saw among Republicans was a little bit over 50%, but with Trump going at it, I would say it's probably, you know, moving up, maybe 60%.
Yeah. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, this
gonna be fun.
Really is fun. Okay, so that's the birth certificate issue and whether or not Obama has been lying to his own constituency, his own base, the American public, whether he's just a liar and flaunts his illegitimacy and laughs about it. That's one issue. Now, could we touch on, has there been any update? Jack Cashel, you were on the show just recently, March 7th, only a few weeks ago, and we talked about Obama's ghostwriter, who's a domestic terrorist, William Ayers. Has there been any update since
then?
Yes,
there has. An interesting development, and this is, you know, what I have, in fact, I just wrote an article for WorldNet Daily tomorrow, headlined How Ordinary Citizens Are Saving Journalism. And what I argue is this, and this is based on, you know, conversations I had with these guys. They're, a friend of mine is a Tea Party activist in New Jersey. I had spoken at his group in 2009. And he called me during the week and said, hey, you know, we were just down at Montclair State University here in New Jersey. You know, we're trying to organize actually a conservative group of professors on campus, which is an encouraging sign right there.
Yeah.
And he said, we noticed that Bill Ayers is going to be speaking on campus on Thursday night. Bill Ayers, of course, is the guy who made unrepentant a household word and a former terrorist. And he said, then we started talking strategy. And what they agreed to do was to, instead of protesting the Ayers thing, is to take a video camera down. And they did. And they were very clever about it. They had a very, first of all, they had a high-quality video camera, and they had a stable, you know, shooting base so that there was a good quality video. And they got the last question in the night, and the guy who asked it was an attorney, and he asked it in a very lawyerly way, so as not to be too leading, but to give Ayers enough rope if he chose to hang himself, in which he more or less did. Now, he didn't hang himself. He hung the White House, in a sense, because Ayers got no, you know, there's nothing. Ayers has no problem with telling the truth on this, by the way.
Right.
The problem is Obama's.
You mentioned on the show a few weeks ago, Jack, that you thought that Bill Ayers eventually is just going to come right out and say, hey, I wrote the book.
Yeah, and he's taunting him now. And the, you know, the what he did, though, Thursday night is pretty typical. So the questioner asks, he says, listen, a Time magazine is called Dreams from My Father, the best written memoir ever produced by an American political figure. And what do you think? You know, he went to say, do you agree? And Ayers interjected. He says, I agree with that. I do. I think it's a very good book. And then Ayers says something that he had never said before, which actually tracks with what I've been saying all along. And Ayers says, unlike his second book, Audacity of Hope, which is more of a political hack book.
Right.
And that was overlooked in this little flurry, but it was an important point. And then the guy, the questioner, moves on to another question. So I think he thought maybe I'm getting all I could out of him, or I'm going to let's let him take the lead on this. And so the questioner starts to ask a question about Libya, and then he says, but, you know, then Ayers goes back. He says, hey, incidentally, I wrote Dreams for My Father.
He said, know? He actually said that.
Yes, he did. And then he said, yeah, I wrote it. And then the guy said, you wrote that? And then Ayers says, yes, I did. And then he throws in a little ironic jab at the end, and then he calls the whole, that's the last question of the night. He goes, and if you could prove it, I'll split the royalties with you. You know, he says that with a little smile. The first few things he said with a total straight face. Now, you know how the left responds to this. I can tell you what their headlines say. You know, and they're all, of course, oh, he's making fun of the right. Yeah, right. And here's one headline from Slate. Bill Ayers started a joke that started the whole world hyperventilating. And they think that on the right, as soon as everyone hears this, oh, Ayers wrote Dreams for My Father. Oh, no. No, we know what we're doing. Those Tea Party guys knew what they were doing. What they were doing was they don't care what Ayers says, whether he says it or he denies it or he doesn't. We know he wrote it. I mean, that's for me, that's not even an issue. They're trying to get this story back in the news. And it can only get back in the news if Ayers allows it to get back in the news. Mm. And that's exactly what Ayers did. Ayers, without prompting, introduced this back into the news. And then that opened the door for me. I was on Fox and Friends yesterday morning because now they had a visual lead. So it wasn't like they were just creating this story out of nothing.
Right, right.
So they could show the clip. And then they asked me, you know, when I started it, Gretchen Carlson on Fox and Friends asked me, she goes, was it a joke or was he being serious? And I said, it's a joke, but the joke is on the White House. And then I went on to explain that, you know, especially at this critical time, with the war heating up in Libya, a war that Bill Ayers and his friends do not like at all, and which Ayers made clear, I said, this was his shot across Obama's bow, you know? This is his way of saying, hey, you better play ball with me, or I got the goods on you, you know?
Ooh, yeah.
And then I was able to introduce into this. This is only about a four-minute-long interview. It's up on my website, by the way, cashel.com, C-A-S-H-I-L-L.com, for anyone who wants to see it. This is the first time, as far as I know, that on a cable or a network TV station, 3 points were made. And the first one I said was, I have no doubt that Bill Ayers was the primary craftsman behind Dreams for My Father. To the question was, do you think that Ayers... Obama wrote his book, and I answered it that way. And then the second thing was, and I reinforced Harris's point on Audacity of Hope, the second book. I said, as he says, it's a political hack book. He disassociated himself from book number two.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It also suggests that those books had different authors, which they did. And the third, and I was surprised I got this in because I wasn't really, didn't think I'd get the opportunity, but they opened the door to me. And that was... I asserted that there was no Obama family. And I described newborn baby Obama and his mom, their flight from Hawaii to Seattle. Mm. And then they did not return to Hawaii until after Obama Sr. had left for Harvard. And I'm saying this on the air. This family never lived together. It was a fabrication. Mm. And I can imagine the response of people who are watching this. You know, 99% of American people never heard this.
Right,
you know?
Right, right.
So then, as though they were part of the New Jersey guy's plot, Media Matters for America. Are you familiar with these people?
Oh, sure.
Well, they're utterly evil. What slimy, evil people they are, you know? And they're very well funded, by the way. George Soros is a big funder.
Yeah.
They have a $10 million a year budget. They have 90-person staff.
Yeah.
And they don't do any reporting. What they do is they throw up these comically, unintentionally comic ad hominems at anyone who dares on the right say anything.
You know? Yeah, they took a shot at me last time I was on Fox, and because of the scheduling or because I was a lousy guest, the segment was cut to about 58 seconds.
Yeah.
And they made an assumption that during that minute, the Fox producers realized that I was a radical right-winger, and they cut the segment short. That was,
well, you know,
that was about 2 months ago.
They have a double attitude towards Fox, which is the golden calf and their you know mosaic rat. You know, and that is that they hate Fox beyond Fox's ability to be hated. I wish Fox deserved their hatred as much.
Oh, yeah. Just like
did.
Bush. I wish Bush deserved the left's hatred for being a conservative Christian.
Yeah, honestly.
That they think he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the right, most right-wing president ever. I wish he were. He wasn't, you know?
Right.
But, and then when Fox does something like they did to you, you know, and it's probably just scheduling because they, you know, they, you know how those things will work. I got bumped. I went to New York last Friday and got bumped.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you got a good meal out of it.
I got a great trip. It was beautiful weather. You know, my family lives there, so it was good for me. But
hey, Jack, before you finish that, I flew out to Manhattan. I was on Fox's one of their evening shows a few years back, and a Hollywood actress was on the panel. This was the full Nelson. It's one conservative against four liberals.
Yeah.
And she got up out of her chair. And actually, this was about the Wilding in Central Park.
Yes,
right. Guys groping women.
Yeah.
Right.
She got out of her chair and came across the stage and began to do a lap dance on me. That's at the beginning of the hour show. Yeah. Doug, did you ever see that?
Who is this person?
I'll remember her name. She's a frizzy-haired blonde comedian from... I don't watch the Hollywood sitcom, so I got to remember her name.
I respect you
anyway,
more for not remembering who
I
she
took
was.
Off my microphone. This is about 10 minutes into a one-hour show. I took it off, and I walked off the set, and they begged me to come back during the commercial break. I said, of course not. I'm going to the police station to file a sexual harassment or sexual assault complaint, which I did.
Yeah.
But they struggled for a half hour. Coolio was on that episode. You know,
Coolio? Who?
Coolio, the black rapper.
Okay.
The first
rap
artist, the first one.
Okay.
And anyway, they could not figure out what to talk about because there was no conservative to criticize. But so things don't always go well when you're dealing with Fox.
Hey, can
yeah,
I?
And it's
can
live TV, and you never know what's going to happen, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Jack, I got one more thing. By the way, Jack Cashel, author of Deconstructing Obama. Go to Cashel.com, CASHILL.com. Jack, with Mr. Ayers being quite the efficient wordsmith, do you think he's aware that the most effective jokes contain an element of truth?
Oh, absolutely. He's a clever guy.
Very clever fellow.
And what he does, and this is an old Stalinist trick, you know, you just tell the truth, and you tell it with a sneer. You know?
Uh-huh.
And then for the emotional health of the left was greatly relieved when at the end he throws in a little punchline, you know.
Right.
But they've got to be very anxious about this sort of thing. I don't know how they get through the day. I don't know when you work for Media Matters. Mm. You know, when the beauty of what Media Matters did, by the way, yesterday, was immediately after my show was up, they posted it online.
Well, that's helpful.
So when I went back to my office, and I saw the only one who had posted it was Media Matters. I didn't get my own version up until the afternoon because I had to purchase it. But I immediately referred all my Facebook and Twitter people to the Media Matters site because they show the whole 4 minutes. And their own people, now my people aren't going to be dissuaded by their stupid headlines.
Right.
But I got to wonder what their own people think when they watch this.
Right.
And I say, for instance... You know, did you know that Obama, by the way, went to, you know, Seattle with his mother? The whole story is false. No one on the left has ever challenged me on that.
Right.
They could challenge me on the authorship issue because it's impossible to fully prove the willfully blind's satisfaction.
You know? Right. So,
but
Jack,
not so with his residence in Seattle, Washington.
Yeah, and can I ask you this? How about the Social Security number that Obama uses? Is it when our kids were born, they were issued Social Security numbers based on the state that we lived in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know that part of the story?
Yes, I do. What I did is, you know, because I kept getting questions about the Social Security number. I didn't know the answers well enough. So what I did is I tracked that story back to its source. And it's a woman named Susan Daniels, who I've gotten to talk to a few times. She's a licensed private investigator in the state of Ohio. You have to have a license there to do it. She works for law firms. Contracts with them, and what she does, what she specializes in is asset research, you know, asset location and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So she knows her way around databases. She has access to a lot of them that you and I don't. She's no fan of Obama, and she disliked the drift of the country in 2009. So she just started doing a little, you know, database hunting, and then turned up his Social Security number, which begins with these three numbers, 042. 042 is a Connecticut number.
Connecticut.
Number, she was able to track the people who had the number before him and the number after him, you know, in terms of sequentially.
Right.
And they were both roughly his age, and they both were, you know, lived in Connecticut. Now, it's not impossible that there was some sort of bureaucratic error, but it's also not impossible that this number was somehow either stolen or manufactured at some point in his career. And the thinking there is that, and the theories I've seen, and they're not, they make sense to a certain degree. I don't have enough confidence in them to say they're true, but I have enough confidence in them to say that they're worth investigating. Part of the whole birther thing is not that he was born in Kenya or born in Indonesia, but that during his transitional years in Indonesia as a boy and his adoption by his stepfather, Lolo Soetoro, that he became an Indonesian citizen. And then he returned to the United States and went to prep school as a foreign exchange student. And then he went to college and the same thing.
When he got student loans, is there a question about the amounts of those loans and whether they were loans that foreign aid students would get?
See, that's why all of that information is inexplicably off the table. So this is part of the reason, I think, and this is why this theory makes some degree of sense, that it is for this reason that we cannot see his college grades, his admissions, his transcripts, his theses, anything. Not from Occidental, not from Yale, not from Harvard. The thinking is that at some point he, you know, maybe even after he became serious about a political career, did they realize that they had an issue on their hand and went back and, you know, finessed the records. The problem is with Barack Obama is that, and this is appalling, is that we know less about him than we knew about George Washington. You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Especially his early years that we don't know.
In the information age.
I've absolutely refused to ask questions.
Yeah, when they hide information, like Bill Clinton hid his medical records.
Yeah.
And I remember the accusation of Juanita Broderick,
right,
who said in the Camelot Hotel, in her hotel room, Bill Clinton said, "Don't worry, you won't be pregnant. I had mumps when I was a kid."
Yeah, put some ice on that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so it'd be interesting, I mean, just, you know, what did she make up, that he had mumps, that she talked to his mother? That'd be one little minor bit of interesting information.
That's one of the details that give that story the ring of truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it is. You're absolutely right. And that was, of course, one of those great buried stories, even though finally, under duress, Lisa Meyer on NBC did run an interview with Juanita Broderick.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we mentioned that when you were on here, and we protested against Bill Clinton for that in 144 cities, Jack. We organized protests.
Wow.
From Martha's Vineyard all the way down to Auckland, New Zealand.
Yeah.
I can hear the left saying, well, he may be a rapist, but he's our rapist.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. They couldn't care less. So we're almost out of time.
We're almost out of time. I want to know about Jamie Gorelick, the mistress of disaster.
Yeah.
Please, can you give us, in a nutshell, if that's possible, how many different ways has this woman participated in the destruction of Western civilization?
Well, and she's still at it. Now there's talk that she'll be the next director of the FBI.
No.
J. Edgar Hoover has got to be doing, cartwheels in the grave. Jamie Gorelick was,
just at a high level, Jack, she's involved in Fannie Mae and the 9/11 avoidable crisis. She's the one who wrote the wall memo.
Yeah, it's far worse than that because what I saw is her major contribution. She was the political officer within the defense, the attorney general's office. She was deputy. Janet Reno was her boss under Clinton, but Reno was a figurehead that no one trusted, nor did she trust the Clintons. So when it came to the dirty work, they assigned Jamie Gorelick. She was, her title in Oklahoma City was field commander. She played a similar role with the TWA Flight 800 investigation.
Well, the Flight 800 investigation where this plane just blows up, and they took the investigation away from the National Transportation, the NTSB?
Yeah, NTSB, and they gave it to the FBI. It was totally illegally. She masterminded that. Here's the interesting thing, and then it's about 6 months later, they turned a transparent missile strike into a mechanical failure right in front of our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And run, you know, the New York Times was complicit in this, just being stupid. But 6 months later, the most plum job in Washington opens up. It will pay, according to the New York Times, $25.1 million over the next 6 years.
Wow.
That's a good
and that
gig.
Job is vice chairmanship of Fannie Mae, the mortgage reinsurance corporation. And here's Jamie Gorelick with no insurance or mortgage or financial experience.
She was a housing expert, wasn't she?
Right, she's an attorney. I mean, she doesn't know anything about this. And she gets the job. And I went back and did a Lexis search. I couldn't find a single media outlet asking, why Jamie Gorelick?
Mm. Yeah.
Well, 6 years later and $25 million later, she steps down to become one of the five Democrats appointed to the 9/11 Commission.
Which outraged me at the time, yeah. Jack. I was so enraged because she's the one who wrote, if I got it right, the Wall
You're
memo,
right.
which
right.
which stopped the CIA from sharing information with the FBI, and we had one of the terrorists from 9/11 in custody 2 weeks before, and
right.
the absurdities that they were playing games with the security of the United States. It was completely avoidable, and she is put on the 9/11 Commission. I was outraged.
Yeah, and that was just one of the – you're right. That was her most notable screw-up in that time. Less well-known was her role in Oklahoma City in Flight 800. And then she's on the 9/11 Commission. I was sure that she was put there to keep this stuff all under wraps.
Mm.
I can't imagine that she had any other purpose in being there. Now, why put a mortgage official on a 9/11 Commission? You know?
That just doesn't follow.
And then the last we heard of her – what she's doing now is she's representing, speaking of Mistress of Disaster, she's representing BP in the Gulf of Oil.
Well, why not? If you need somebody to spin that in the media, if she could deal with a TWA 800, the 9/11 crisis, Fannie Mae, an oil spill is nothing.
Right. I think she deduced that it was a mechanical failure that caused the...
Exactly.
Right.
Oh, she was probably
like on
in the
9/11
the
Commission
North
said it was a mechanical failure brought down the World Trade Center.
Yeah, right.
All right, so we're about out of time, Jack, but so she's being considered now as a candidate to be the next chief of the FBI.
Yeah, seriously being considered, which is, I don't think she'll ever be nominated, or I don't think she'll ever be approved if nominated, but she's up there. I'll go to Washington for that one.
I was going to say, if you and the folks at WorldNet Daily keep doing your job as well as you do it, I doubt she'll ever be confirmed.
Well, let's hope not, but if... You said it was illegal. If you take the NTSB and you stop their investigation of a plane blowing up and you give it to the FBI, which is a way more political agency, normally plane crashes are not very political.
No, they're not at all. And it's against the law. The NTSB is by law commissioned to do this. Now, the FBI isn't necessarily political. It's just that they're controlled by the Justice Department.
Well, right.
And they have to obey orders.
Hmm.
NTSB are... Excuse me, these are independent agents who are pulled together for a crash, and they're not as easily controlled.
So, Jack, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Hey, Bob, anytime. Doug, thanks for having me on, guys.
Thank you, Jack.
All right, that was great. The website is cashel.com.
CASHILL.com. Deconstructing Obama. Get it today.
And KGov.com, that's our site, KGOV.com.